Too bad they don't give out gold stars for outsmarting the lunch lady. Or should I say ex-lunch lady?
Gold stars, yada yada.
Gold stars go to the best student, not the class weirdo who's only at this school because his dad cleans the potties.
All right, kid, listen to me. If you keep this up, you're not gonna have a lot of friends.
I don't need friends.
Hey, look, there's this expression, right? It goes like this. It's lonely at the top, meaning everybody needs friends, even you. Hey. It's all right. What's wrong? It's gonna be okay. It's okay. You okay?
Maybe I say I don't need friends because they're the one thing I want the most. And they act out because I just want someone to like me.
Oh, shoot.
It's lovely at the top, it's lovely at the top, it's lovely, 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 lovely.
Fucking kid.
Welcome to our podcast. I'm Penny.
And I'm Becky.
And I'm Steve.
And this is Murder Magnets, a podcast dedicated to the Peacock original show, Poker Face.
This episode, we're covering Poker Face Season 2, Episode 6, Sloppy Joseph.
The episode was directed by Adam Arkin and written by Kate Thulin and Taya Ho.
So you just heard the voice of Steve, who you all should recognize from his fantastic Live Steve voicemails.
Woo-hoo.
Steve, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you so much for inviting me and bringing me on board. I'm excited to do this. And I love podcasting. And I can't wait to talk about this episode and this show, because I love this show. And Natasha Lyonne is just amazing. And just about everything she's done, I think. I didn't watch everything, all of Orange is the New Black, but I think I've watched just about everything else I could find of hers, so.
Yeah, I've always been a big fan of hers. I remember when she went through her sobering up experience and then, you know, started making the talk show circuit and talking about sobriety and stuff, and I was so worried about her that she was going to have a relapse, you know. It almost like she was a friend. I was like, God, I hope Natasha just, like, sticks with it, and because she's so talented. Mm-hmm. Like I knew her personally or something.
Well, she came back with gusto, and I'm happy for her and proud of her. And Steve, I'm glad that you're on to talk about this particular episode.
This is a good one.
I want to tell you, I'm glad I wasn't on last episode, because I know almost zero about baseball. Like, you guys did such a great job talking about baseball and knowing and Greg knowing what he knows about baseball, and you guys being fans. I was like clueless on most of the things, and you heard in my voicemail, I'm like, how many last pitches has this guy got, you know? So I was really, really glad I wasn't on last episode. This one I can handle, so this was
a perfect fit. When I first started to, before the episode had released, I started making the, you know, our agenda, our notes, and I looked at the IMDb page for who the guest stars were, and I was like, oh, that's a bunch of kids. Ugh. And then I was like, oh, wait, Sloppy Joe, I bet she's a lunch lady at a school. And then I was right, and I was so excited. I was so proud.
Good
of
call.
Not that it's a huge intellectual leap there, but.
I think that was... I wish that is a job she would stick with for longer, because she is the epitome of a lunch lady.
Yeah, she's great. But yeah. I can understand why she left at the end of the episode.
Oh, yeah. Well, yes. Yeah. More like peeled out. Ah, scary. Anyway.
Without further ado, let's get into the main discussion. And we usually start by reading a synopsis, but we have Steve here, and he did a live Steve for us. So I'm going to play that.
I'm so embarrassed.
Hello, Murder Magnets. This is Steve, and I'm about to watch Sloppy Joseph for the first time. I may be on this podcast, so this will be, I'll have to watch it more times when I'm actually on the podcast, though. This could be very meta. Okay, this little girl, Stephanie, is what, some kind of prodigy? Wait, hocus pocus is a spelling bee word? I don't think I can spell leprechaun off the top of my head. Oh, this kid is not going to take failure well. Oh, and Elijah got the stars. Oh, David Krumholtz is in this one. He was in Numbers. And also, he was in Serenity. And we're going to get another Steve Buscemi cameo, too, I think. At least I'm assuming his voice. Okay, so she rigged the box somehow, right, you think? Oh, this poor rat. Oh, holy Howie. What's that guy who used to smash the watermelons? Oh, blood everywhere. Gallagher, that was one, right? Gallagher, wasn't he the comic that used to smash watermelons and get everything all over the audience? She says Sloppy Joe, not Sloppy Joseph, so not the title of the episode. Oh, she found the button on the floor. Okay, so now we get the connection. This janitor guy is Elijah's dad.
Joseph Goebbels, nobody sees the... No,
that's bad. Never get out of the boat. Never get out of the boat. That's an Apocalypse Now reference for those of you. Yeah. Hey, even his dad doesn't believe that it was an accident? Come on. Okay, no, he doesn't. He believes that someone sabotaged the magic trick, so he knows it wasn't an accident. Got it. Yeah. She wouldn't say BS in front of the kid, but she stopped herself. Bullshoot. She can tell that Stephanie is lying. Whoa! The kid just swallowed that button? Okay, probably not a good idea calling her a demon-haired bee. Okay, so the poker chip's coming out of her purse, and Stephanie is obviously blackmailing this woman. Oh, and of course, Stephanie was hiding in the restroom. Wait. I can't believe that's the gerbil. Hold on. Okay, now this has gotten a little absurd. Oh, this is a very feel-good ending. I like it. Oh, and somebody gave Charlie a gold star. Aw. With a threat from the little pigtail girl. So she now has a new nemesis.
Awesome. Yes, that was so good. I didn't catch the Apocalypse Now reference.
I've got it. It's in my notes. When we get there, I'll talk about it because it's very. I don't know if it was meant to be an Apocalypse Now reference the way they used it in the show, but
I think so. That seems pretty like specific.
Yeah, he repeated it so often, just the way the guy in Apocalypse Now. Anyway, okay, I'll just share it now. In Apocalypse Now, there's a scene where the boat mechanic gets off the boat and he gets attacked by a tiger. And he runs back to the boat like Martin Sheen saves him, and he goes back on the boat, and he's on the boat, never get out of the boat, never get out of the boat, never get out of the boat. And he just keeps repeating, never get out of the boat. And he's like, tiger, tiger, and he keeps yelling tiger. So that's where I thought it was coming from. I didn't realize it was going to be.
It must be from that. Because they make a lot of references like that on the show where it's a really tiny reference.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought it was great. And then when she finds the gerbil environment being a boat. Also, I was kind of like, well, okay, I can see that, but still, it's still never get out of the boat. He said it.
No, exactly. I agree. Guy. I think it's a reference.
Yeah, I think so. That's intentional.
The absurd line when I said this is getting absurd was when the little girl yells, "This is socialism."
Yeah, oh, that was so funny.
And then she just burst out of the room and starts running, and I was just like, "Really?"
She was in full meltdown.
Yeah. It was a great scene. So I absolutely loved it. But this is a great episode. I really enjoyed it. I liked the way it ended with Charlie. Kind of moving on again, Kung Fu style, like you guys have kind of talked about before on here already. Because I liked Kung Fu and I liked Incredible Hulk when I was a kid. And so obviously this would be cool if that's kind of what she does but we'll see how they do the story going forward.
I mean, it's an eternally refreshable premise to have someone on the road all the time, right? You always have new scenes and settings you could explore. You just have to have a reason for them to be on the road.
Mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
Well, running away from Wednesday Addams is a good one.
Yeah. Let's get into our moments to die for. As our guest star, Steve, you get to go first.
So for me, I think the biggest one I had was when I watched it for the second time, particularly, was that opening montage with showing Stephanie and all her getting all her gold stars, showing her calligraphy. I loved seeing the dioramas, and I don't know, again, we talked about references. I don't know if that was a Community reference there. If you watched Community, you know, season, was it season two or season one of the seasons, they did a bunch of dioramas. Like every week they were doing a different diorama. Yeah. So I thought that was cool. Seeing all the kids in the background being little kids, being kids, and her being like the super mature was just like, it was, I loved it. And then the spelling bee, and we'll talk about the spelling bee later because there's more to say on that. But, on my second watch, particularly this opening montage, seeing Elijah in the back of the room talking only to Joseph and being like, here, pick a card, Joseph. It made me, on one hand, it made me feel, made my heart kind of break for the little kid, you know, because he's all alone. But then also, because it was my second watch, I knew how it was going to end. So I knew that they all come together being friends again, at least everybody except Stephanie, because she's a little turd. But wait, did I say that out loud? No, but anyway, so yeah, for me, that opening montage of seeing all the different cards and then seeing Charlie's card, and what did it say? I'm Charlie Kale and I like being truthful or something like that.
I don't remember.
I didn't see that.
Yeah, I want to go back and watch it again, because that honor, the whole honor pledge that she was supposed to sign, had something about I'm Charlie Kale and there was this.
Yeah,
and
then she had to promise to be truthful.
Yeah, and I thought that was great, because that's her whole thing, is telling the truth. So
yeah, she's definitely a truth finder and a truth teller.
Yeah.
Becky, what was your moment to die for?
My moment to die for is a little off the wall, it's just what stands out to me with this whole episode is the David Krumholtz. Is that how you say his name?
I think so.
When he popped on the screen, I had to pause and have a moment of silence for Lucy with ER. He's the guy that played, if you watched ER, that played Paul Sabricki, who stabs Lucy and Carla.
Oh, he was that.
Yeah. And I'm
so grateful he played a nice, lovable person in this, because my first thought was, no!
So, I'll be honest, I didn't even recognize him. I said his name when I saw him in the credits, and then didn't, because he had that mustache and everything, and his hair was so much, kind of, he's got that widow's peak going now, because, I mean, we get older, we start to lose our hair a little bit, and that's, but, so I didn't recognize him at all, because I've known him from Numbers and then Serenity, where he has this
big, he was flowing, great in Serenity,
flowing locks of hair. So
it's so funny, because I looked, you know, I was like, okay, I know him from these things, but I looked at his IMDb page and I was like, he was in Slums of Beverly Hills, but I thought that the guy who was in the funeral home episode was in Slums of Beverly Hills. Did I get them mixed up and get that wrong? No, they're both in Slums of Beverly Hills.
Okay. So,
and one of them played her brother, but I think maybe the other one played someone she was dating. I haven't seen that movie in a long time, but it's very good. If you haven't seen it, it's quite funny. And it has Alan Arkin as the father, who is the father of Adam Arkin, who directed this episode.
Okay, thank you. I always, because I see that name come up all the time, and I think Alan Arkin is the name that pops in my head, and I go, no, that's not who this person is. It's good to know they're related, so that's cool.
Yeah, they're father and son. Adam Arkin, you might know from Chicago Hope. He did like something like 120 episodes of Chicago Hope.
Okay. He sure did.
Yeah, and a bunch of other things. My favorite Adam Arkin role is he was the psychiatrist on West Wing, who's a PTSD specialist. There was a whole PTSD storyline that I really enjoyed on West Wing.
That show was so good. I binged it last year for the first time watching it. And
oh, your first time.
Oh my gosh. So
I've never watched it. I'm going to have to add it on my list.
Oh, it's you need so to. Good, and so good. You mentioned you hadn't seen Orange is the New Black.
Yeah, in a while. Yeah, I watched the first few seasons. I just don't remember finishing it. So I think it just kind of fell off my radar. It kind of fell off my radar. And
well, if you've seen the first few seasons, you've seen the best. But if you got time at some point to finish it, I recommend that.
Okay. All right, so my moment. Yeah, my moment to die for was, again, I'm picking the ending. I thought, you know, I really was enjoying the ending montage where they showed everybody, like, you know, their lives improving and, you know, the principal goes to Gamblers Anonymous and all that stuff. And I was like, oh, this is nice. The show doesn't usually have such a, like, happy kind of ending. And then the gold star on Charlie's dashboard, I was like, wait a minute, that seems suspicious. And then the reveal of when I grow up, I will find you in like perfect cursive. And then the shot of Stephanie just standing there like a Children of the Corn child, like glaring at Charlie, I thought was so funny. And then Charlie's look of like abject horror as she like puts the car in gear and skids out of the parking lot. I just thought it was a fantastic way to end the episode. Just the way that this episode spent the entire time sort of bordering on the absurd, right? Yeah. Like it was just right up against the edge of what was ridiculous and sort of enjoyed living in that moment. And I thought the ending was a perfect cap to it.
Yeah. And great music too. Make great music choice for that.
Yeah.
Scene was awesome.
Lowe's knows you want the best for dad. This Father's Day, help him take on any project with big deals on DeWalt. Right now, get a free XR 8 amp hour battery when you buy select DeWalt tools. That's not all. Get up to two free select tools when you buy a select DeWalt 20 volt max battery kit. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a work load is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
So let's get into our main discussion, and Steve, you get to pick our first topic.
Well, let me see. What I've got a lot of different things on here. This is something that it didn't occur to me until the second watch, and I started this note with, didn't all the girls have the same buttons on their uniforms? So how would this one button and her missing that button be the clue? But then as I watched it the second time, I really started to realize we have seen Charlie's investigative skills, her deductive skills, and her interrogation skills really just go off the charts over these last two seasons. And we see it culminate, in this episode with her doing this investigation. You know, she finds the button, just a random button on the floor, and doesn't think anything of it at the time. And then she does the further investigation. She finds out about all the stars that the kids had. Stephanie and Elijah were rivals. And then she does that investigation with the computer where she's like, she digs in and goes, well, let me find the photo, you know, find the, why was this kid running back and forth? And then she goes to interrogate the principal about it. And she talks to the principal and she finds but first she talks to the girl first, and I realized I was reversed in it. She asked the girl first if she sabotaged the trick, figured out it was a lie, and then she used the button to confirm what she had learned in her not being able to tell being able to spot a lie kind of thing.
She's getting better at investigating, but not getting better at being safe when she confronts.
Well, yeah. and actually gathering the proof and actually keeping hold of the proof. Because when she goes to the principal, you know, she lays the whole thing out for the principal, but she has no proof. She can't prove anything with what she's just said. She has motive. She had opportunity. And here's the reason why. And here's why I think so. Well, then the principal, just out of the blue, the principal's like, well, don't ask me about my friendship bracelet. Or she, like, you can tell that Charlie knows she's being deceptive about something. And then she keys in on the friendship bracelet and is like, you know, well, why don't you want me to ask you about the friendship bracelet? And of course, then it progresses on from there. But I just, I thought it's so impressed me this episode with just how her skills as an investigator and putting clues together and making deductions has really gotten, because again, that button could have been just a random button that some kid lost, you know?
Yeah.
But when she keys in on the fact that girl was missing one,
she is incredibly observant in addition to having this truth sense ability that she has. She's really good at noticing, you know, absence of things or changes in things and patterns. It's an additional gift that isn't really stressed on the show very much, but I don't think I would. I mean, I might pick up a button from the floor, but I don't think I would notice that one particular kid was missing a button.
I probably would notice that. she was missing a button. But I love that they made a small child the toughest opponent that Charlie's had yet.
Yeah.
And whoever played that kid did a
she was so
phenomenal
good.
She really was, job.
Yeah.
Yeah. The kid acting all around in this was really good. I thought Elijah was really good. But the kid who really impressed me was the, like, computer genius kid who shouldn't have sugar. Yeah. I thought his whole thing was so entertaining.
His whole stick, and just spinning around in the chair and everything was just, I don't know if that was a stage direction given to him or they told him, hey, act bored. And he was like, here's how I would act bored. And he would just.
Yeah. And then at the end when he's like, I love Elijah so much, I'm going to give him all my stars. Like, that kid, he's just a standout. I loved him. Stephanie, of course, was fantastic. She was so, like, believably horrid.
It's so difficult to be the straight man in a comedy.
Yeah.
And I think that's – so I love what she did there because she was able to have all these absurd things until she finally has her meltdown and, you know, she breaks down. But she stayed straight through the whole thing, even when she tried to con – Charlie with her whole fake cry and lying about not wanting friends, you know.
Oh, that, God, that was hilarious. It's lovely at the top. It's lovely at the top. Yeah. Oh, what a brat. Oh, my God. It got me thinking about, we've definitely seen this kind of kid in fiction before, right? Like the overambitious, overachiever, like, you know, rule follower, prim, whatever. And I was, the best version, I think, is Tracy Flick in Election, played by Reese Witherspoon.
Yes.
It's an absolutely brilliant film that when I was thinking about it, I was like, Still Slaying should cover Election. That would be a good fit for us. And then I was also thinking about Miranda Cosgrove in School of Rock. She wasn't nearly as mean as Stephanie, but she had that same kind of like, I'm the best in the class and what I say goes and I know the rules and you don't know the rules kind of thing going on. Mm-hmm. There was also an episode of Bones where that was a murder that happened at a little kid beauty pageant that had these kind of characters, these like super competitive overachiever little girls that were kind of terrifying. It's a trope I like.
It made me think of the, I don't know if either of y'all have ever read any Dean Koontz novels, but he's got a book called The Voice of the Night where about the two little boys and one of the little boys is, you find out is absolute evil. That's who she reminded me of.
I have not read that one. That's one of the few I have. I have a lot of Dean Koontz. I'm a huge Dean Koontz fan, or at least I was. I mean, in the 90s going into the early aughts,
yeah.
I'm a huge Dean Koontz fan and read a whole bunch. That particular one, I don't think I've read, but I have a lot. Like Hideaway is one of my favorite books of all. And the book, not the movie, the Jeff Goldblum movie was not
terrible,
good. But the book is outstanding, and the good guy. In fact, I'm looking up my shelf, seeing my stack of Dean Koontz novels up there right now. Dragon Tears, all the really good books. So,
well, check out The Voice of the Night. It's my favorite. I got two favorite books out there, and that is one of them. So you'll really.
I do like an evil little kid story, which is good because I watch Supernatural a lot and they go to the evil little kid well over and over again. That show loves an evil child. It's pretty great. I want to visit a little bit with Charlie and her relationship with Good Buddy.
Yes.
He's sort of like her conscience or something, you know, like the Greek chorus. He sort of comments on her life, gives her like a little bit of cryptic advice, and then that's it. This week it was distrust of the government because of the honor pledge. And he said, don't underestimate the scope of the modern indoctrination industrial complex, which I thought was pretty funny. She calls him Bukowski, and that I assume is a reference to the writer Charles Bukowski. I don't associate him with distrust of the government so much as alcoholism and mistreatment of women, but I have not read a lot of Bukowski because the Bukowski I read was not to my taste. Mm. So I don't know if that's, if he's like an anti-government kind of guy, but then she's like, she thinks that the structure will be a nice change, which I do think is something that she's craving. And then she said escapism get out of the world of men and back in the world of kids. Get some of that childlike wonder, that love, that trust, that whole antediluvian era of innocence and honesty. So she's got this idea that children are wholesome and innocent, and that she'll somehow be able to capture, you know, childlike wonder, which I think Charlie does a pretty good job of on her own. Like, mm-hmm. she's constantly being sort of awed by things. Her use of antediluvian was pretty funny. That means before Noah's flood. So that's like a really long time ago for this era of innocence and honesty to have happened. And then Good Buddy comes back with, like, have you met kids, basically?
Yeah, it's like you've obviously never spent any time with kids.
Yeah, like, good luck with that. Let me know how it goes. And I like this conceit they have of Charlie having this voice on the radio, this sort of anonymized, you know, disembodied entity that she confides in and gets advice from. It's a nice narrative conceit that allows them to sort of drop in, like, foreshadowing and themes mm-hmm. without having Charlie being forced to say a lot of exposition and stuff. I think it works narratively.
Yeah, I'm enjoying. I love Steve Buscemi as an actor, and I can't wait to. I don't know if we're going to actually meet him in person this season or not, but whether we do or not, it's been great. He's been a great addition to the show.
I agree.
Yeah,
I do like talented. How at the end she's like, "Yeah, you were right. I don't know anything about it. That was not the right call." But I love that. We don't know what job she has until she's behind the lunch line. And I just have written in bold letters, she's the lunch lady. And the kid looks at her, he's like, you look tired.
Just move along, kid.
No one is more honest than little kids. They will just say things to your face that hurt your feelings so bad. But, like, you can't get angry at them because they're just being honest. They'll be like, why do you have a big wrinkle there? Like, thanks. Thank you. I feel great now.
I had
one little kid one time hugged me, and then he went, why do you have such a big belly? And smacked me on my belly.
Oh.
Yeah.
And his parents were like horrified.
And two little boys Well, they're grown now. One just graduated high school. One was at baseball practice, and I had the youngest in my lap. He was, I don't know, probably 4. And he was facing me, and he was like, you have a hair on your chin.
Oh, he's thanks. Like,
and there's another one, and there's another one. And the moms sitting around are cackling, and I just picked him up and turned around. I was like, how about you watch your brother practice baseball and stop pointing out all my chin hairs.
Yeah, honesty. But, like, when you get a compliment from a kid,
they mean it.
So my mm-hmm. neighbor across the hall several years ago I had a neighbor who had 2 little kids, and I got to be sort of friendly with the kids. And one time, the little girl, when she was about 6, told me she really liked my outfit.
Aww. Aww.
And when a 6-year-old girl tells you they like your outfit, they really mean it. Yep. Like, that's not politeness.
I
have never felt so stylish in my life.
I love, you know, I always, when a kid tells you they love you, it's like the most genuine, unconditional love out there, because they have no reason to, you know, they just, like you said, they're just mostly always honest and they mean it. And it's just that love getting that love from all the kids in my world.
I
love me some little kids. They are a lot of fun. That sounded a little creepy.
It did. I'm glad you said that out loud, because I was thinking it. I was like, yeah, I don't know if I'd say it that way.
Yeah, let me rephrase that. I'm a very dedicated auntie, and I really enjoy not only my nieces and nephews, but, like, their friends and stuff, too. I just think they're a trip to hang out with.
Same. That's where I'm at, too. I don't have any kids of my own, so I have just poured all my love into my own nieces and nephews, and then the god kids around me, and I just watch them growing up. Of course, all mine are older now, and it's a whole different world. But you know, they're 16, 17, 18, and one is in his mid-20s, but they still want time with Aunt Becky, and that means even more than when they were little. Like, oh, you're 16 and you still want to hang out. It's like, you want to come meet my girlfriend? I'm like, yes.
Nice. So cute. Yeah, they're the best. I can't get enough of hanging out with little kids. I think we're back to Steve.
Let me see what I've got. This is a quick one, but I'm looking at my notes. I'm trying to see the two gerbils at the end when they have the fake Joseph.
And, did he have a collar on his neck?
He had like a bandage.
Okay, I wanted to. I was like, that might be the cutest thing I've ever seen.
Well, then they were like having marital relations there that, in the gerbil cage.
And Stephanie, that's not your gerbil husband.
Yeah.
I was just like, when I heard that, especially on the second watch, I was just like, oh my goodness, I didn't catch that.
Oh God, so funny.
And that whole thing of that ending, you kind of mentioned it already, Penny, but the ending of the idea that kids are eventually, some kids are good, you know, in that when you give them, because I'm assuming what happened is the teacher and Charlie, or the teacher went to them and said, hey, we want to make Stephanie look bad. I don't know. Maybe they did a common enemy of Stephanie or something.
I think they just said, we want to make Elijah feel better. And it wasn't his fault what happened with Joseph. We know now that somebody else messed up the trick. And how can we make him feel better? And then kids get on board with that kind of stuff.
Okay, that makes sense to me. I was just trying to figure out how they kind of made a turnaround there.
I doubt they said, like, let's all vilify Stephanie. I think that would be a lawsuit.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'm with you, because that when we talked, you mentioned earlier, Penny, about that this episode bordering on absurdity. That whole part was just, it was so, I don't know. I had a hard time buying that. And I went back and forth like you, Steve. I'm like, how? Because they, you know, in the last scene, somebody said it's Elijah's name and the kids start, you know, gagging or whatever. So it's like, how did they make that turnaround? And in my head, the teacher did come and say, look, we want to make an example out of Stephanie. So we need y'all to get on board, because that's the only way that makes sense. That they really would have rallied around Charlie or Elijah that to that extent, because that was over the top welcome back kind of thing.
I believed it, because I have a feeling that the kids helped her set up turning the whole room into a boat. And so by the time they were done preparing and they all had those gerbil ears on and stuff, like their initial like, oh yeah, we can make Elijah feel more at home, had become like a group project that they were all excited about.
Yeah, okay. That's fair.
I can get on board with that, because they didn't. Well, we don't have any evidence of them actually turning on Stephanie. We just have Stephanie's reaction.
I think you're probably right, Penny.
Yeah.
I don't think they could have done that.
I think it's more of they all got on board with, let's make Elijah, this was an accident. We know that he didn't mean to do it. You know, let's make him feel better, kind of thing.
Yeah. And then the one kid just got carried away in the moment, right? Yeah. I love Elijah so much. Like, that's where I got in the moment.
That kid has ADHD.
And he just got really excited in the moment.
I want to give him all my stars. Give him all my. Yeah.
That's, oh my God, it was so cute. I also love the moment when, I don't remember what the context was, but somebody's like, kids, I think it's when the teacher is telling Charlie, like, kids at this age are kind of funny. They're not in puberty yet, but like they kind of know it's coming, but they're still little kids. And then Charlie looks around the room and the kids are like, a lot of them just have like plastic buckets on their heads.
One is just eating
like,
glue.
Some are crawling on the floor. and she's sort of like, yes, I see. Yes, they are children. This is a good reminder. Like, there was something about that moment that really got me. I thought it was so cute. I also loved Miss D. trying to help Elijah by giving him magic related spelling.
I had that in my notes. I was like, oh, that's cute that she's doing that. But at the same time, I was like, are the kids going to figure out that, you know, maybe they're not smart enough to figure out that like abracadabra, that's not a word.
It's an onomatopoeia.
onomatopoeia. She said it is so a word. Many times. I was like, that was one of those parts that I was like, I thought it was great the teacher did that, but at the same time I was kind of like, is that kind of like pandering to, I mean, I know she said he has potential and she just wanted to give him a win. So
I think it's kosher because, like, I think every teacher, especially a teacher who's in an elite private school, has the mandate to, wherever possible, personalize the learning experience for the kids and the strengths and weaknesses that she sees, right? It's like the same thing with like putting Elijah in charge of feeding the gerbils, because like he likes being with the animals and it gives him something to do that he can feel like he's accomplishing. So, you know, throwing him a spelling bee word that he's gonna know, that doesn't hurt anyone. And it, you know, I don't know if she was trying to rig it so he would win. She didn't have any reason to believe Stephanie couldn't spell the word abracadabra. You know, like that was just.
Yeah, that was a little luck. That was another one of those things that like you said, just luck that she didn't. That was a word she just had never studied or didn't think of as a real word. So.
Yeah.
I like that. And she was also, if I'm not mistaken, I don't know the actress's name, but she was also in Orange is the New Black.
Yes. Adrienne Moore.
Big reunion there.
Yeah.
We'll
keep seeing. I think we're going to keep seeing Orange is the New Black alums on this show. And I really hope, I cannot remember the actor's name, but the actor who plays Moira on Handmaid's Tale, I hope that they find somewhere to put her in Poker Face, because she is so good. She was so good in Orange is the New Black, and she was amazing in Handmaid's Tale, and I would love to see her in this.
Kusei was her name on Orange is the New Black, right?
Yeah. She was delightful Samira on that show. Samira Wiley. No.
Yeah.
Yes.
I think that's right.
Anyway, I liked Miss D a lot, but I have to say I don't approve of the gold star competition chart on the wall. I know that that kind of thing happens in a lot of classrooms, and I think making it so public like that is, you're sort of bound to end up with some unhealthy competitiveness amongst.
Well, especially when you have one particular kid who's not just an overachiever, but is a good at everything overachiever.
Yeah.
You know, when you have one kid who's just so, she was so far above everybody else that it's almost like, I wonder if she was inventing ways for other kids to get more stars, like 20 Maybe. Points for the winning spelling bee or however many points. I don't know that she said how many stars they get for the talent show. I don't remember,
30 for the talent show.
30. There you go. So
it's a lot. I think those charts can be, you know, that you can motivate kids with them, but it can also just be like a really unhealthy environment.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
Yeah, I think it can work both ways. I think it is a good motivator to see your successes, you know, as you learn things, and especially at that age, you know, a kid comes home with I got a star today. You know, I like that teachers do that as a motivating factor to give them confidence and make them feel good. But I do agree that when you have an overachiever, that takes away from other kids having the opportunity to get those gold and stars. Also, it could cause some.
There's a big difference in my mind between, you know, every kid that gets 100 on their test gets a gold star on the paper, and putting a chart up on the wall. The wall chart, the kids are looking at that all day, every day, being like, oh no, I have the least amount of stars. You know, it's just, it reminds me of my law firm used to send a monthly report around with the associates and the number of hours they billed in the prior month, and would rank them by the number of hours we had billed. And all it ever did was stress me out.
Mm-hmm.
I hated it and I resented the list. So I think I had a little bit of a personal trigger from the gold star chart there.
Can understand.
Yeah, fair.
I had a couple of little things that I noticed that I hadn't ever noticed before. And just because watching it multiple times, Charlie has a tattoo on her left shoulder. I couldn't tell exactly what it was. It looked like a musical note, or it was something, but it was kind of on her, like either a snake or a something.
I think
on
that
her.
I've noticed it before, and I think it's a snake, but now I need to go and look at the episode again and check.
The other thing is,
she wears vests all the time, so we should be able to completely see her arms.
Yeah. The other thing was, I noticed that she wears her digital watch on her left wrist, and she wears it upside down. And also, it might be dead. The battery might be dead because it was blank. The face was blank when she was holding that gold star. I don't know why I noticed that on the second watch when she was holding the gold star, but I just happened to see that, and I thought that was interesting. I thought, well, that's an interesting way to.
So it's more of a bracelet that looks like a watch.
Yeah, exactly. And the billboard, the did you see the blackboard that had the life expectancy of animals?
Yes.
On it.
I missed that.
How morbid is that? Like, they're telling these kids, this is how long these animals are going to live.
And they were divided into like under 3 years and then 3 to 50 years. And I was like, what a weird way to divide that. Okay. That is a little bit morbid, but I guess maybe they were studying that in science class.
And plus they had gerbils, so they wanted to make sure the kids understood that, hey, these gerbils aren't going to be here in 3 years, you know, or
3 months.
Or 3 months or whatever, however long. I don't know how long gerbils last.
In my personal experience, they last one night.
Oh, no.
We got pet gerbils when I was like, I don't know, like six. And everybody, we are all really excited about it. And then the next morning, I woke up really early and I went downstairs to look at the gerbils, and they were belly up.
Oh, no.
And my sister for years would say, I can still remember your scream.
That's straight out of a horror movie.
That's wild.
Yeah, they didn't last. We also had suicide fish. We've had a lot of... We had a lot of pets growing up. We always had lots of pets. And, you know, when you have a lot of pets, you're going to have some dead pets. And, I have some stories. Rabbits didn't fare well in our house either. What did you guys think about Charlie's confrontation scenes with Stephanie? There were basically three. There's like the merry-go-round one, the bathroom one, and then the janitor office one.
My top quotes from this episode came from those interactions. And, you know, I like how Charlie, when she first, you know, confronted her on the merry-go-round and she's interrogating her, she actually is aware that she is talking to a small kid. She's not going at it like she does with the adults, which I think was a very very, what's the word?
Appropriate.
Appropriate, but self-aware. Charlie doesn't always seem to be self-aware. So I thought that was, and, you know, censoring herself when she starts to say bullshit, instead she says bullshoot. But when she's interrogating her and she's, you know, trying to get on her level. And she says, I can see that you're a gifted kid. And believe it or not, I'm a little gifted too. And Stephanie says, at what? Smelling like wet beef.
So mean.
I almost died. And then when she's in the bathroom and she's realizing that this kid is basically untouchable, and you know, Stephanie is like, well, what are you going to do about it? And Charlie says, a force greater than me is coming for you. Stephanie said, the police. And Charlie said, puberty.
That's good. I had another thought on that. Does that kid just hang out in the bathroom hoping to catch somebody saying some blackmail material for her?
I thought about that, and I think that she was tailing Charlie because she knew Charlie was trying to bring her down.
Okay.
And she knows, you know, I mean, she obviously is following, what's the principal, Dr. Ham. Around because she's got, you know, her under
with a stethoscope
under surveillance. Yeah, that was, I loved that. That was such a kid moment for Charlie when she was describing, you know, because she was such a fascination with that lady's name. And
Dr. Ham.
Yeah, and then she's like, reminds me of a cartoon pig wearing a stethoscope. And then JB just looks at her like she's crazy. But I loved seeing her interact with this child and trying to keep herself in check, that she is talking to a child, but also hating that child because that child is pure evil. I loved seeing her try to balance that. And I think she did a great job.
Yeah. And I liked the progression of her facial expressions as she's talking to the kid, where she's like, oh, maybe I can talk this kid into doing the right thing. And then she's like, oh no, she's worse than I thought. And then in the bathroom, she's like, she's even worse than I thought. Like, again.
Yeah.
Shuts the door and hits her vape.
Is this the first episode where no one has died? Where no human has died?
Yeah.
I think so.
Because I wrote that in my notes to where when the teacher first tells Charlie what happened, I can't remember exactly what the teacher says, but Charlie's line back to her is, wait, JB's kid killed another kid?
Yeah, that was Misty.
She automatically defaults to somebody being murdered in her presence, because there's been so many murders that have happened around her that automatically when somebody dies, she's like, wait, somebody was murdered.
Yeah. Well, no, so when the episode opens and it like starts to show Stephanie as this like overachiever little demon child, I was like, oh no, are we gonna have a kid murderer? Like,
oh, I hope not. Yeah,
I was like, that's dark. I don't know if I could take it. And then as the, you know, episode unfolds, I'm like, okay, she only murdered a gerbil. I can live with this. Like, it's not that dark.
See, Mandy called me today and we were talking and she was talking about how much she liked this episode. And she said something about the gerbil dying. And I said, I prefer it when it's, you know, a human death on the TV versus I felt worse for the gerbil than I have for the other characters that we've lost.
Most of the people that have been murdered kind of a little bit at least had it coming. You know, well, that's not completely true, because like Katie Holmes's character, she didn't do anything wrong.
No,
but I was just glad that I didn't have to see a child murder somebody else.
Right. Or a child get murdered. Yeah.
Or a child get murdered. Yeah.
Yeah. I was more scared that there was a child that was going to get murdered is what I was when it opened the way it did.
I thought it was just going to be a silly mystery. I didn't think it was actually, when I saw it was in a school, I didn't think it was going to actually involve a death at all. Mm-hmm. So when Joseph got smashed, I was like, oh, okay, so that's our mystery.
Yeah
And I had to go through on the second watch. I had to figure out, I realized what happened, because it confused me a little bit when she's in the janitor's and she's examining the trick. You know, she finds the hole on top, she finds the wire, and then when she goes down to lift the box up and look at it, that's when I realized she was looking to see if there was anything like on the bottom, like I think she was checking to see if there was no bottom on the box or if there was another hole there.
Yeah, she wanted to figure out how to sabotage it.
Right, and I didn't figure that out until this. It took me the second watch to realize that was how she figured out how to sabotage it. All she's got to do is turn it upside down, because the wire would be in the same place on the box no matter what, whether which side was up or down. So,
Yeah.
I do love when she...
It wasn't until second watch that I realized that she used the picture intentionally to distract Elijah so she could flip the box without him noticing it. And I was like, that is ingenious and diabolical.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Oh my God. Your talents are wasted, kid. You should join the CIA.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Except for her ScholarSeek Google search where she starts typing how to murder a boy and then adds the S, self-esteem. I was like, well played. That was funny.
I forgot about that. That was a good way to mess with our expectations.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a bunch of visual moments in the episode that I thought were really fantastic. Like, first of all, the whole first section that was all kids' point of view was all shot from their eye level, and the adults were like peanuts adults, where even though you could hear what they were saying, like, you didn't see any of their faces. They were just legs, basically. And I just enjoyed that. Like, it was a complete kid story at that point, and we were totally at their level. And then when Elijah, you know, kills the gerbil accidentally, the camera being his point of view and the blood splattering away from the camera onto the audience, I thought was just an amazing cinematographic choice of like just gross and creepy and blood splattery and like just exceptional photography there. And then my favorite, though, is when Dr. Ham leaves the bathroom and then we slowly see Stephanie's feet come down in that one stall. And you're like, oh! She's there. She's been there the whole time. Like, like, you know, get it away. Like, she's just evil.
Yeah, yeah. There was some good. The camera work in this show is really excellent most of the time. So,
yeah, they do some really nice things with the camera. And I appreciate it.
Yeah, it's kind of like when they bring that, and it didn't catch me until the second time watching it because I think I must have blinked or something. But when they bring in that cake. And that's got R.I.P. Joseph on it. And Charlie goes to cut into it. She cuts into it at like his neck.
Yeah. Spot. And it has like raspberry filling.
Some sort of red raspberry filling comes out of it. And like, I can only wonder that the kids must have been like gathered around the cake watching. Because all you hear is all these kids go, in horror. In horrifying.
Awesome. And,
what a poor choice. Any cake that had a picture of the gerbil on it was going to have the gerbil get cut up. Like, yeah, exactly.
I was like, this just seems like wrong. Someone made a bad decision here.
That always makes me laugh with people who get the cakes with their face or somebody else's face on it. Like, you're just basically slicing up your face. But to be honest, cake is cake. Put whatever you want on it. I'm still going to eat it.
Love a photo cake. There's something about it that is so unbelievably corny that it makes me really happy. And I will get one at any excuse. I'm like, oh, I know what we need for this party. A face cake. Like, I just get really excited about it. It's hard to find bakeries that do them. I've had to call around a lot. Like, there's a special machine and apparently it breaks down a lot. So you can't always get a face cake when you want a face cake, but I find them hilarious. But it is always funny that you're like, oh, I'll just cut right here into your eyeball.
Yeah.
We had one for my brother's PhD graduation. His wife got some baby pictures from my mom and used one of those. It was really great.
Aw. So you
very cut cute.
You ate the baby.
Well, when he blew out the candles, he spit all over the cake. So actually, I didn't eat any of it. Ooh. It was not a clean blow, as they say. So I was like, no cake for me, thanks.
Oh, that would have made me sad. I might have just scraped off the icing and still gone for it. I freaking love cake, man.
Yeah, there's
I want cake now.
The whole tradition of like blowing out the candles on the cake that then everyone's supposed to eat is kind of gross. Like, I feel like with COVID, we all should have stopped that tradition. Like,
well,
we don't do that anymore.
Yeah.
A friend of mine, this was post-COVID, but when we go celebrate, usually go around my birthday to Huntsville, Alabama to visit them, and she got me a fan, and I used the fan to blow out. So you still get to make your wish and blow out the candles, but instead I, you know, used a, like the hand fan, church fans, to blow it out. So that's kind of been the thing from now on. So I like that instead of, but yeah, but you think if we've been, I mean, I feel like all of our immune systems are better for being young children that ate birthday cakes for years with kids blowing their germs all over them. Can I talk about JB?
Yeah, let's talk about JB.
Yeah. I don't think I had any notes on him, so.
Once I got past him being Paul Sabricki, I loved him. I loved how sweet, you know, it's oftentimes in shows like this, or in shows in general, it's usually the mom who gets the lovey-dovey feature moment. And I'm glad that they gave, you know, this single dad who's doing his best to take care of his kid after his mom died, and that he's working as a janitor, being demeaned at this, you know, Winky Fingers prestigious school to make sure his kid gets, you know, what he considers the best education, encouraging him with his magic trick. And then Charlie being sweet, going over there to check on him. And she says, he's venting, I guess, about being worried about his kid and what happened and how it's going to affect him. And Charlie says, don't kids forget everything like 12 seconds after it happens? Something about too much water in their brains. And JB says, I think you're thinking of goldfish.
Yeah.
They had good chemistry together. Yeah, and really I'm glad did, yeah. she did not, Penny, you talked about last week, them making her hitting on guys a thing. I'm glad they didn't go there.
Yeah,
this episode, because they could have
a buddies relationship.
Yeah, like,
they had developed a little bit of buddyship at work, and then she cemented it by going over there. It was a lovely scene, and they made him caring, loving, thoughtful, but not cloying or overdone. Like, he hit this really perfect note of this like concerned dad who would do anything for his kid, but he wasn't like hovering over the kid, and he wasn't like, my baby boy would never hurt a jerk. Like, he was it was a really lovely middle ground that he occupied, and I was like, I really want this guy and his kid to be okay. Like,
and then when he brings him back to the school, like, he's encouraging him, you know, like, oh, it'll be fine, just go in there like every other day, and don't, you know, don't let it get you. I thought it was really great. And then at the end, getting to see him giving him the wand, you know, to tell him to keep doing your magic tricks.
And he had that magic hat on too. And then the man put a tie on with his janitor uniform and went in to watch that talent show. I was like, I love you, JB. That was just, he was my favorite character.
He was really cute. He says to Charlie, kids live in a different world than we do, and it's a lot bigger, and it's a lot louder, and it's a lot meaner. It's a jungle down there.
Yeah.
I have to say, I agree with that. You know, if kids have a great childhood and their parents are wonderful and loving and they have all the things they've ever wanted and they don't have any trauma, like, that's great. But I think a lot of kids at some point encounter trauma, whether it's because of the family they're in or just something bad happens to them, you know, who knows, like a car accident or a kid that they know dies or whatever. Trauma happens to little kids, and I think adults forget that childhood isn't just like a lot of people are like Charlie. They think little kids are like, it's all about like playing ball and like dolls, right? Like, they forget that kids have darkness that happens that they have to deal with.
It's
not just one kid whose mom died. Like, lots of kids deal with some kind of darkness, and and they remember more than you think they do, they hear more than you think they do, and they worry more than you think they do. Like, it's a hard life being a little kid. You don't have any control over your environment.
Can I tell a story that adds to the difficulties of being a little kid and has to do with Sloppy Joe's?
Absolutely.
So, and I'm sorry for everyone who's getting ready to have to hear this, but I have a nickname, and if any of you all call me that, I will find you. Like Stephanie said, when I grow up, I will find you. So my dad has called me Bruce since I was like 4 years old.
Bruce, and okay.
The reason is, it's a cheesy story, but we were sitting having dinner one night and Mom made sloppy joes. And if you've eaten with me, you know, I'm going to end up wearing a good 20 to 30% of what I'm eating at some point. And so I had gotten the sloppy joe all around my face. And my dad looks at me and he's like, "You look like you have a goatee." He's like, "I'm going to start calling you Bruce." And he did. And I'm 48 years old and the man still calls me Bruce. And when I hear him say he would say my name, Becky or Rebecca, I was like, I am in so much trouble because he always called me Bruce. And Mom was like, "We need to make it a little more girly." So she still, I'm 48 years old, calls me Lucy Bruce. And that sticks with you, man.
How do you feel about that? Like, is that a cute memory for you, or is that a bullying memory for you?
No, to be honest, I had a difficult relationship with my dad growing up. We're in a better place now, but he didn't, long story short, he wasn't very kind to me growing up. So at the time it felt like bullying, but now I look back on it and have a chuckle and see it as just just one of those funny moments. Fact that they still call me that today.
It's complicated, right? Like relationships with parents. It's complicated.
Yes. Yeah. Very. Yeah.
Don't remember ever having a sloppy joe at a school cafeteria. I remember having them at home, but I don't remember them ever being served at school. Did you guys have them?
Yep.
I don't remember. I remember hamburgers and hot dogs being served.
Square pizza.
I remember pizza.
Yeah, square pizza.
I don't remember if I ever, now that you say that, Penny, I don't know if I ever, because yeah, I don't know if I remember somebody scooping something out and dropping it on my plate like that, or picking it up out of a case.
I just feel like they wouldn't have risked such a messy food in a cafeteria environment with so many kids at one time. Like, it's one thing for a parent to supervise like two or three kids with sloppy joes, but like 300 kids with sloppy joes just seems like a disaster waiting to happen.
Yeah, it seems like a lot of mess to have to clean up.
But it is stereotypical cafeteria food.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recall having them in elementary school, but we did have them in junior high and high school.
I think, well, by that time you can be trusted to not make a huge mess with your food unless you're doing it very intentionally.
Unless you're me and wear 25 to 30% of your food when eating it. See, now I want sloppy joes, square pizza, and cake.
Yeah. Can you tell? I pretty much always want cake. I know. Well, we are recording at dinner time, so it's expected.
It is. I did eat right before, but a little while before, because I was like, I don't want to be getting hungry in the middle.
Yeah.
So, what'd you have?
I had pot stickers from Teriyaki Madness.
Nice.
Yeah. I've never heard of Teriyaki Madness.
I've got ramen for later.
Yum.
So, yeah. Did she give the kid the principal's bracelet there at the end? Was that?
Yes, she did. Take that off from
the principal and now put it on the kid, the "You Are Mine" bracelet. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, that was my runner-up moment to die for, was the way she was like, shake on it, and then instead of shaking her hand, she put the bracelet on her. I was like, that's mean, and probably the only language that Stephanie understands.
Mm-hmm.
I've got a couple of quotes, but then I've got just a couple of just little small notes to before we wrap up. So first one is, just want to give a shout out to Margo Martindale, who played Principal Ham.
Yeah.
She's been in so much amazing stuff, but I loved her as the records keeper on Dexter.
And that's right. That was her. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah.
I loved her in season two of Justified. If you have
Wasn't she in Justified also? Yeah.
She was the mom, right?
She was like the matriarch of a crime family.
Yeah. Yeah.
In the Caitlin Dever season, and the two of them together were amazing.
Yeah. That's where I know Caitlin Dever from. That's
oh
why.
Oh my gosh, you're right.
I've been watching her on the cast of. I mean, she's only been briefly on the cast of The Last of Us, very brief. But I was just like, how do I know that name? And that was the girl from Justified. Yeah. Okay.
When they're going through at the end and they're writing the awards or whatever on the chalkboard, mm-hmm. and it's they write best mutually assured destruction, and it's Stephanie having to shred her evidence against Dr. Ham, and mm-hmm. Dr. Ham having to delete the photo of her, Stephanie trying to set up JB's or Elijah's dad.
Yeah.
I just thought that was so funny.
That was great. I loved it.
Yeah, I love the best Charlie. Best Charlie.
Yeah. And that's when she gets the gold star, right? Or sees the gold star.
Yeah. The ominous gold star. I did want to point out that early in the episode, the music that we got was a song Spitfire by The Prodigy that I thought was a really nice fit for a evil child storyline. Mm. I thought that was really good. And then the song at the end, I wasn't familiar with, but it was basically like, if something good is happening to you, pass it along. And I was like, well, that's a nice philosophy on life. There was that whole movie, Pay It Forward. And I guess that's the same idea. Nobody talks about that movie, Pay It Forward, anymore. And I have a feeling it's because Kevin Spacey is problematic.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know that I've ever seen it.
It's Haley Joel Osment, right? Yeah. It's decent. It's not bad.
It's fine. Anybody got any more favorite quotes?
I do, if that's okay.
Go for it.
First one is when they're doing the spelling bee and the girl's given the word leprechaun and she just screams why and starts crying and walks away.
I can't blame her. That's a hard word.
I think in my voicemail I said, I don't think I can spell the word leprechaun.
You did. Yeah, you did. Yeah. Yes, you did. And then Principal Ham comes down to the basement and asks them to empty their pockets. And Charlie says, you can't be serious. And Dr. Ham says, don't I look like I'm serious? And Charlie says, well, yeah, perpetually.
That's good.
And then Stephanie's card for Joseph is, I'm so sorry Elijah murdered you.
Oh, God. So mean.
That's so funny. And then Charlie, last one, Charlie gets Paige to the principal's office and she says, I'm a grown-ass man. Why? Why did that just make me terrified?
Oh, God, oh, so that's it. Great episode all around.
Yeah, it really was.
We're going to take a little break and be back with some news.
Now all the angry fools just leave me alone and we all live together in a happy home thanks to Sloppy Joe, Sloppy Joe.
We're back, and we just have a little bit of news this week. The first thing I wanted to say is that although all the Nielsen ratings are not out yet, that the first three episodes of season two that launched on May 8th were a top five original title across all streaming services. So nice. The show is doing great. I think that bodes well for a season three pickup.
That's awesome.
Yeah, hopefully.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Yeah. In an interview with The Hollywood Reporter, showrunner Tony Tost says, with such a heavy-hitting roster, how did you approach casting season two, and how did it work when you were coming up with episodes? Were you writing with actors in mind? Tony says, it's a little bit of a grab bag. When Wyatt Kane pitched the third episode, he pitched a John Mulaney type, and Natasha was like, I was just texting him. Let me ask him. So it can come that way. Or sometimes we'll be thinking about character and I'm just like, who actually would be good for this character? Who of Rian and Natasha's many cool friends might want to come and hang out for a couple of weeks? And then sometimes it's a more traditional thing where we go through our casting director and see who's available and make some offers. There's this grab bag chaos because every 10 days we're starting over again. And we have to recast and repopulate the whole show. Sometimes we would cast someone overqualified for the role, so we'd race back through the script and ask the writer to do another pass so we're not wasting them. And all of a sudden, we've got this performer doing some funny bits that were inspired by their casting as opposed to the other way around.
The interview continues with the interviewer asking, how many ideas did you have that you couldn't fit in? Do you already have enough for a season 3? We don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but there's a stack of murder ideas, story arenas, character ideas that we just never got around to in season 2. So there's a good start, even if it's not something we're actively talking about just yet. The interview continues. Do you plan to unpeel the onion that is Charlie Kale more in the future in terms of bringing back Clea DuVall and more of her family story? I'd be surprised. There's almost a perverse joy in refusing that contemporary television tendency to really dive into the trauma or the backstory or the mythology of a character. There's something that Ryan and I both just delight in, and I think Natasha agrees. You can imagine some aspects of her past and you get little pieces, but we're never going to explore it like that. People from her past can show up, but I don't think it's that kind of show. Other shows do that very well. Let's focus on this thing that we do, where we just follow her from adventure to adventure. I like that because, again, I remember being a kid liking the Kung Fu style, Incredible Hulk style shows of people just going from town to town and kind of not really having anything, you know, kind of a have gun, will travel kind of thing, wanted dead or alive, you know, different. Wild Wild West did it really well as well. They would almost have different characters every week and different adventures the guys were going on. I always really liked that. So I'd be excited to see Charlie Kale just driving the road. I don't care. I don't need to know how she makes money, how she gasses up her car, where she poops. I don't need to know all that. I don't care. I just know that she's having these great adventures and we at least have one episode where somebody didn't die. So. Yep.
Yeah, I'm glad that they're sticking with what makes this show work. And I appreciate that because so many shows, when they realize they have a hit, they just completely change the flow. And that kind of can sometimes make a TV show tank. So kudos to them for sticking with what they do best and making it work.
I would love to see Clea DuVall back on the show just because I love Clea DuVall. And I thought she was great last season as Charlie's sister. But I also agree that they have a formula that works narratively and that we're all enjoying. So, like, let's stick to it. Incredible Hulk was one of my favorite shows when I was a kid. So the narrative structure they're using just works for me. Moving on to some listener feedback. We got a little bit of feedback on Facebook and another voicemail. So, Becky, you want to read that first one there from Matt?
So, Matt King says, poor Joseph Gerbils, ... Another great episode and loved that final scene. I loved it, too. They couldn't have ended that episode any better than they did.
Yeah, I agree.
Jared Harden says, I started watching and my heart broke. I had to pause it. I'm going to dive back in, but I'm not ready just yet. So I'm not sure if that's referring to the death of the gerbil or the unfortunate circumstances of Elijah's school
act. I have a feeling it was, this is about kids. I don't know if I can handle a murder mystery involving kids.
Gotcha. I'm saying it's because he realized that was Paul Sobriety from ER. And, he and I understand, Jared.
Or that was Mr. Media. What was his name in Serenity? Mr. Spectacular, not Mr.
I don't remember what his name was, but he was all about the signal. He was like a broadcasting person.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jared did write back and say, update, finished watching and loved it. So I'm very glad you were able to get there, Jared.
Yes, thank you, Jared.
And we got a very last minute voicemail from our good buddy Greg.
Yay.
Love Greg.
Okay, man, I am glad to finally get a show with children in order to restore my faith in humanity, and oh my gosh, they killed it. Okay, so this was disturbing. I'm glad that the murder victim was not a person, but this was quite the disturbing talent show. I thought this was a fun episode. I thought it was a little bit more realistic than some of the others that we've had. Maybe not the absolute insanity of a child, but at least some of the reasoning and whatnot. I mean, she very much there at the end looked like a little girl from not The Omen.
That was a boy.
Orphan Black? I don't
know. Oh, The Orphan.
It was...
The Orphan.
Orphan. No, it was Orphan, yeah. That's probably what it was, right? Anyway. I really enjoyed David Krumholtz. I was glad to see him in a non-stoner role. He's been a favorite of mine since 10 Things I Hate About You.
That's right.
Anyway, yeah, I really enjoyed it. And Charlie, putting herself into a quote-unquote dangerous situation with a suspect when the suspect is a little girl didn't seem really stupid at the time. But we will see what happens when this little girl grows up. All right, I will cut it now. Board to the episode.
Was that one of Greg's? Was one of the Greg's?
Yeah, I think
little,
we were hearing ones? Greg's daughter in the background.
Oh, is that what that? I kind of made me a little scared for a second. I was like,
yeah. He has. I love Greg. Greg is a fellow veteran. He's retired Navy. I'm retired Air Force. So identify a lot with Greg, Greg's great.
He's great. Yeah, I've podcasted with Greg a lot, and he was on, of course, last week. And he's
a
great guy.
A lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, after the Greg Love Fest, we are done. Thanks everybody for writing in and calling, and we'd love to hear from you.
And if you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our contact info at podcastica.com. And you can find other shows and links to our social media pages. I'd like to say my podcast with Mandy, What's On Tonight? We are back and are covering The Better Sister that can be found on Prime Video. All the episodes are out, but we're going to cover them one at a time. And we are recording. By the time this comes out, we'll have recorded for our first episode. But please check out our What's On Tonight page. And if you're watching that show, leave us some feedback. We'd love to hear your thoughts.
I watched the first two episodes and I'm completely hooked. It's
so good.
It's a mystery show. Kind of reminded me a little bit of like Broadchurch or Defending Jacob or what was the one last year with Nicole Kidman and Hugh Grant? I can't remember the name of it. But it's that same kind of like 8 episodes or 10 episodes mystery, and you get to like follow the cop and follow the main people, and it's good. Jessica Biel.
Oh, is this Better Sister? I want to check it out. I would definitely want to check that one out.
Okay, live Steve.
Yes. So you're doing, so what's the email address to send stuff to?
It's what's on tonight and the number 2@gmail.com.
Okay. Yeah. I will check that out tomorrow. That's going to be on my list for tomorrow morning.
Awesome.
Don't forget to follow, subscribe to Murder Magnets wherever you get your podcast. And, we just love those 5-star ratings and reviews. So go ahead and post those up there. And for me, if you care to hear my voice more, I'm on the Panels to Pixels podcast with my co-host and co-anchor, Mark Kirkman. We cover anything from comics to that goes from the panels to pixels, comics to movies. Sometimes we do whatever's out there, Panels to Pixels podcasts. We're going to cover it tonight. We're going to be reviewing comparing and contrasting for our 300th episode. We'll be comparing and contrasting the Lester cut and the Donner cut of Superman 2.
Oh, how esoteric and cool.
Yeah.
That's going to be an interesting one. So yeah.
300 episodes. Congratulations, 300. Mark.
Thank you.
That's
Thank
so
you.
Cool.
That is really cool. We'll put a link to Panels to Pixels in the show notes, as well as a link to What's On Tonight, so you can find them. very Thank easily. You, ma'am.
Well, next time we'll be covering season 2, episode 7, One Last Job, Famous Last Words.
Well, that is all for this episode. Thanks for listening.
And Greg Schwamm, we know what you did, you psycho.